That's a clip there by Lewis Skelly that is going to be a nailed on yellow. Oh, it's a red! Well, this is quite something. I was convinced that was going to be a yellow card for stopping a promising attack, but Michael Oliver has seen it differently. And the check is complete. Arsenal are down to 10.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Ian Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellum.
Hello.
So, you know, when you've done over 600 podcasts, there is always a little voice in the back of your head that thinking like, oh, did we talk about this quite recently, or have we done this before? What would the listeners like to listen to us talk about? And do the listeners really want us to talk about VAR and refereeing decisions again? And you know what? Sometimes you'll have a weekend where no matter how hard you try, you just can't avoid it. Terry, do you want to talk about VAR and refereeing decisions again?
Yes, Graham.
Okay.
Yes, I do. Because it's fun.
It's fun. And you know, everyone must want us to talk about it, or people must want it, because otherwise the media wouldn't be full of it, would they? They wouldn't be full of decisions and whether or not they were right or wrong or stupid, and whether or not VAR should have stepped in or not stepped in, or maybe Mark Gay shouldn't have stepped in.
Don't start. Don't trigger me, Graham.
It was a blustery day. It was bad weather. Who knows what was happening there? I mean, yeah. Well, anyway, okay. Let's just talk about North London clubs then, shall we? Will that make it easier for you, Terry?
That's a good idea.
Okay. Yeah. As well, if we're not talking about refereeing or VAR, then, of course, we've been spending a lot of time this season talking about how bad Tottenham and Man United have been and what the hell's going on there, all this shaking up of the status quo. Do we really want to talk about Tottenham again, Jan?
Yeah. I mean, it's, as we said last week, they're brilliant to watch.
Yeah.
Regardless, because they're always battering someone, being battered or being embarrassed. One of those three, always the same.
Yeah.
And the bin fire is not just on the pitch. It's across the club, isn't it? So it's wonderful to talk about. And we've got not just one bin fire in the Premier League, we've got two because we've got Man United as well. So yes. Yeah. Why don't we talk about those clubs? Because, and this will probably come out in the edit, really easy content, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is easy content. And we shouldn't avoid easy content just because it's easy content. So fine, we will do this. We will talk about the North London clubs. We will talk about Arsenal and that red card. And we will talk about Tottenham and that banner. That banner. And I think we'll start off talking about Let's go for the red card. Let's go for Michael Oliver handing out Arsenal yet another, as Arsenal fans will remind you, Michael Oliver handing out yet another red card, as he is accustomed to do, against Arsenal for what most people think is a fairly innocuous challenge. Well, not an innocuous challenge. It was certainly deserving of a yellow card. But Michael Oliver, in the moment, he was very close to it as well, immediately fished out his red card. Didn't even think twice about it. I was at a game. I was watching the Whiteleaf game. I flicked over onto Blue Sky in a quiet moment. There weren't that many quiet moments because the match I was watching had a red card and two penalties. But hey, this is step five of non-league. You expect some more eccentric refereeing at some points. But I saw all of the discourse that was going on from Arsenal fans mainly about how terrible a decision it was. Now, we've had a couple of days for everyone to calm down. Terry, it's probably not worth getting my opinion on it because I'm an Arsenal fan, but you're a Palace fan. You've watched it. What did you think of the incident itself?
So when I first found out about this, I was listening to Radio 5 Live.
Yep.
At the time, and I was actually, I was in my neighbour's house playing darts, and I saw this noise on Blue Sky, it was Miguel Delaney, the august journalist Miguel Delaney, who was astonished at the decision. And then there was a bit more of that going on in Blue Sky. I went to listen to the rest of the Football on Five Live, and Pat Nevin was raging, and Alan Shearer was raging about this decision. And I thought, bloody hell, it sounds like he's got this one really wrong. Michael Oliver, he's done it again, folks. Arsenal's Michael Oliver has done it again. I didn't actually catch the highlights until a lot of people didn't catch the highlights until the morning or match of the day. And I watched it, and my first reaction was, blimey, that's a bit strong for a trip. I thought, he's tripped him there. He's done him. It's a professional foul. It's an absolutely bang on yellow card. It's an earned yellow card. It's a well done, lad. You've earned that yellow card. You got us out of a spot of bother there. Well played. But it was a red card, and I was shocked. Shocked, I tell you, shocked. Then I saw the replay, and I was less shocked. Because the replay, you can see that the studs are on the ankle, and it looked, I thought, quite nasty. Now, I'm sure, Graham, you've got a different point of view, but I think that that's a tough one to overturn.
Mm.
That's what I would say about that. I have definitely seen them not given, for example, later in the match when the Wolves fella was given the second yellow card, that I think by the same standards that you're setting in the same game, so almost exactly the same context, for me, that should have been a straight red. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the Arsenal red was not a red. It just means that Michael Oliver's not a very good referee. So I am not sure now, I'm not vacillating, but my view is that I thought that's a harsh red and probably could have been a yellow. But the problem is that it's a tough one to overturn because it is studs on ankle. Tell me I'm wrong, guys.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I completely agree with your analysis, although I do think Michael Oliver is a decent referee, so I'll disagree with you there. But the you're quite right, and almost the same story happened to me the first time I saw it. It looked just like, well, there's a professional foul. He's just tripped him over, so you deserve your yellow card. And as a professional player, it was the right thing to do because Wolves were going to break and Arsenal had most players forward, so why wouldn't you do it? But you're right, once it slowed down, and you can see the studs are on it. So there's a definite yellow card for the foul, for the professional foul. And I think an upgrade on that for the fact that his studs were up, he effectively stamped on his ankle. And my position was hardened by the fact that Alan Shearer was losing his shit, which, but he's lost his mind over it, which just entrenches my position even more. But you know, there's a few things to take away from this. The fact that there's been a bit of, I wouldn't say a wind of change, but there's certainly been a breeze of sorts about referees and trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. And this weekend, it was like everywhere I looked, it was about Michael Oliver and how terrible he was. And who would have thought that some idiots that follow pundits and journalists who are incandescent with rage about this decision in a game of football, in a game of football, choose to go to the nth degree and make death threats against Michael Oliver, which, as we've said already on this pod, is going to happen. And at some point, someone is going to do something stupid over a game of football. So I think everyone just needs to take a chill pill, really. It was the right decision. And even if it wasn't, what does it matter? The guy shouldn't be getting death threats.
Yeah, we can all agree that death threats are abhorrent, but people can disagree with the decision. If you think that the referee has made a decision there that you won't normally see given, and I don't think you will normally see that decision given, then I think you can question, why is he given it? Now, I don't think it's worth a red, personally, because he's not left the ground. Yeah, his studs have connected with his ankle, and I'm sure it did hurt. But it's not like he's left the ground. I've seen challenges where people have left the ground and they're still not booked, even, let alone given as a red card. If you're saying this is a straight red, and you could detail it as a red card, because especially if you freeze the video at the right moment, it looks horrific. But this isn't a stamp. This is a trip. And I don't see that as a red card. I mean, if you're saying it's a red card, then fine. But you've really got to have these challenges punished by reds every week. And frankly, you're not. You're not seeing that.
I think that's the issue, isn't it, Graham?
Yeah.
Is that it's soft. It is soft.
Yeah.
I absolutely acknowledge that. I've got no rancor whatsoever, genuinely no dog in the race whatsoever with this. If I was to put myself in your position, that was a Palace player, I would probably think there's no way that's a red. But the trouble is, the difficulty is that once the decision is made and it's been reviewed, they looked at that and they go, well, there is studs, it is ankle. Do we have enough here to overturn that?
Yeah.
The reality is that this, I would suggest, is an error of judgment by the referee in that probably he's given a soft one.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't have done. And I think he's compounded that by not giving a straight red to the Wolves player later in the game when he perhaps should have done. And then at least we would have seen some consistency there. So I agree it was a red, but I also don't agree that it was a red.
It's just another point on that as well. So Michael Oliver is arguably the most senior referee in the country, certainly in the Premier League. So just circling back on your point there, Terry, about it's a difficult one to overturn. You're absolutely right for all of the reasons that you've said, but also add into the mix that the person in the VAR box is probably a lot more junior than Michael Oliver. So that also makes it a difficult decision for him as well, which I think we've come across before. It might have been with Michael Oliver. The point is, when you've got seniority like that, whether Michael Oliver's in the VAR box, it may be that he overrules and someone feels that they can't challenge that, even though the referee's decision is final in these things. And the same is true in this game. So it is an interesting one, given who Michael Oliver is.
I think what you have is, again, you've got the perception of VAR failing again. And it's not failing in this case. It's doing its job. It's just the fact that its job is a poor one.
Mm.
And everyone's expecting VAR to say, well, actually, come on, take a breath, have a look at that again. That's not a red card. And you see lots of ex-professionals looking at that without any attachment to Arsenal and saying, what the hell is that going? Pat Nevin said exactly the same thing at the time on Radio 5. And going on about, this is a challenge you see all the time, even when they saw the replays. Now, that may be a question of, well, it looked innocuous when I first saw it, and I've not seen enough to change my mind about it, which does happen. But obviously, Michael Oliver's seen that, and he says, right, I think that's a red card. What are you going to do to disprove it? And VAR can't do anything to disprove it because, yeah, there is contact with the ankle. So there is no way that VAR is going to overturn that. In which case, is there any chance that a panel of ex-footballers are going to overturn it? Well, they might do because they're footballers and they will have more of a question of how the game should be played rather than a literal interpretation of the rules, which is what the referees do. That's the difference between the referees and the appeals panel, because the appeals panel is not referees. So this is why Bruno Fernandes' red card was overturned earlier this season. Still only overturned by two votes to one on that one. So it was still in the balance, that one as well. So I suppose this is what people are really angry about, is the fact that VAR didn't step in again. And of course, if VAR hadn't been there, this would probably have been even less of an issue, because it would have been a decision made in the heat and everyone would have just chalked it off as a bad decision. But because VAR is there, everyone thinks, well, PGMOL are corrupt. Blah, 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 blah. And everyone just takes to blue sky.
I think some of the more nasty ones takes to the other place.
Yes.
It does make me think, though, with some of the names that we've talked about, you mentioned there, Graham, Pat Nevin, Alan Shearer, and obviously Carragher and Neville have their say, as they've got quite a platform. But these guys haven't played professional football for a very, very long time. All of them, outstanding players in their day. I'm not questioning that at all. And all of them have a lot of good things to say about the sport, which is why they're paid to do it. And I'm not. However, it was very, very different in their day. And that's got to inform their views on this as well. Things were very, very different then. And you probably wouldn't even get a yellow card for those.
No, were they though? I don't think they were. I really don't think it was that different then. And I think as well, these guys are watching football all the time. And they're being asked to give an opinion on it.
Mm.
The thing about the implementation of the rules is not about whether or not you're breaking the rules or you're staying within them. It's more about the question of, is this the game that we want to see played? And there is a big argument in the Premier League is that the Premier League doesn't want to be seen to be a league where you can't make a tackle, even if it's as a professional foul as the one that Lewis Skelly did. And so you are going to see hard tackles, and they want to see that. And especially people in the media, they want to be able to see hard tackles going in. They don't want to see injuries. Obviously, they don't want to see injuries. But they don't want to see referees sending people off for what they deem as being light challenges.
I think that's one of the interesting things about this decision is it is off-brand for the Premier League because, yeah, I think the Premier League likes to consider itself to be somewhat more of a physical league,
yeah,
more in keeping with the traditions of English football, which has always been perceived to be a tough-tackling physical league. And they're not unique in that respect. Italy can make that claim too.
Yeah.
And it's part of the appeal. And that's what was so surprising about the decision. Was that historically we're used to seeing referees being quite lenient on tough tackles and you know, there've been some infamous instances where blatant fouls have been ignored. That's been a little while ago, to be fair. But this decision seemed to me to be too much following what they would perceive to be the letter of the law rather than necessarily refereeing it according to a set of principles. And those principles being is like, yeah, okay, so studs connected with ankles, not good. But if it's like semi-accidental, if the intention is to trip, if it's not a clear and obvious attempt to injure a player, then referees, I think traditionally, the perception that we have is that the referees kind of overlook that. And that's what was so funny about this particular thing. It's almost something that you might have seen in an international tournament. But on that, I try to think about myself, well, what would have happened if something like that would have happened in Germany, in the Bundesliga? Would that have gone? I just feel that that wouldn't have been given. I think that would have been given as a yellow,
yeah,
for what it was, as a professional foul rather than that. So it seems out of character with English football, which might explain the reaction to it and the surprise, yeah, to it.
Yeah, I think you will see red cards like that in the Champions League, where you've got referees from anywhere over Europe. And then all of a sudden you're presented with what is considered as a red card offence in that country. And I think this is one thing we've noticed with the implementation of the handball law. In the Premier League, it's being scaled back quite a lot to what it is on the continent. You go look in other leagues and handballs are still being given for very, very, very minor incidents. But over here now, they're not going back to what it was, but you're seeing fewer of those really ridiculous handball decisions that we were seeing even just last season. So I think there is a question of what sort of football we want to watch, isn't there? You're never going to get people agreeing on whether or not a tackle was a red card or a yellow card. We've had this conversation here now, and we can't decide whether it is or it isn't. But I think that's what the reaction here was more about, was the fact that I think they saw there was studs on ankle, but does that make instant red card?
Is it serious foul play?
Is it, yeah, serious foul play? Is there intent to injure? And I don't think there is intent to injure there at all. I know we can't talk about intent anymore because that's just not there. But is he endangering that player? I don't know if he is or not.
No, it's a botched tactical foul.
Yeah.
The player should be upbraided for fouling badly.
Yeah.
It was a poorly executed foul. The idea was to trip the guy and stop him from going on the break, not to come into contact with his ankles with his studs.
Yeah.
So there's no getting around that. I mean, that's poor football on his part, and he needs to be spoken to about that. But whether or not he deserves a red card, well, again, it's perception. I was surprised when it was given. When you see the replay, it's difficult to overturn.
Yeah.
And yeah, to Jan's point, Michael Oliver is a senior referee, and maybe Darren England, who, let's face it, is no stranger to VAR controversy himself, maybe he just didn't have it in him to overturn it anyway. I mean, it is one of those ones. It's a benchmark one. We'll see what happens in the future. If we're going to see more like that, then we're going to see more red cards.
Yeah.
It is not the referee's job to punish clumsy play necessarily, unless it's super, super clumsy and genuinely causes injury, but it was a clumsy foul and it should have been a nice little trip of the ankles, sends him over, yellow card, there we go, we move on.
Yeah,
that's what should have happened.
Should have done. Didn't.
Didn't, yeah.
The fact that he was stretching for it and he tried to stretch and elongate himself and just put his toe out a bit further and that probably put his studs up and that just added to it. So you're right, it is clumsiness. However, I do think if the referee sees that, he's only got one decision to make, so I'll stand by that. But it is, Terry, you're absolutely right, clumsiness.
Put it up against Mark Gahey's encroachment, and you could put it in the context of what is finickety refereeing. You could put it in that context and say, do we really want this kind of, what is essentially going by the technicalities rather than by the spirit of the game? Then there's a consistent line that you could draw there. You know, there are referees in there who make football shit. They really do. Yeah. And there's an argument to say that Michael Oliver is one of them.
Yeah.
Because of his interpretation of the rules.
He certainly does if you're an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, well.
because every time now he referees an Arsenal game, the Arsenal fans are just ready for him to do anything against them because his stats are so terrible against Arsenal. Mm. It's something really, it's like he gives 3 times as many penalties to Arsenal opposition than he does to Arsenal. He's never sent off a City player. He sent off 8 Arsenal players in his career. He's only sent off 1 Liverpool player. And so all these stats that you see over and over again, these are the ones that get wheeled out over and over and over and over, and over again. I think there was another one, the Kovacic in the Arsenal-City game earlier on the season. Goes in, studs onto Achilles 2 times in that game. Not sent off by Michael Oliver. All these things are ready, prepared, and any good Arsenal fan on social media will have these banked up, ready, every time Michael Oliver is there.
Just as you've done, Graham, just now.
Just as I've done, because I'm fed all this through social media, so it's always there. I cannot move on social media without seeing this. So it constantly seeps in. But then again, I've got an unconscious bias now. I've probably got a very conscious bias against Michael Oliver.
I was going to say.
Sounding pretty conscious to me, yeah.
You can't accuse someone of having unconscious bias, can you? Because it's unconscious. They can't defend it, can they? So if he's got an unconscious bias against Arsenal, then what do you do? You can't say he can't referee Arsenal games anymore. Well, that's ridiculous. You may as well say you can't be a referee anymore because you're not objective.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's another point to this as well. He's going to be aware of these stats.
Oh,
so every
time
he goes up, he's playing Arsenal. Well, there's 2 things happen here, isn't there, potentially? Yeah. Either these stats are affecting him and it's affecting his judgment because he's nervous as hell about whatever decision he's going to make. Or 2, he really, really hates Arsenal.
So, or 3, both. They're not robots. They don't lack emotion.
Of course not.
I mean, if you develop a bad relationship with the club as a referee, then it's difficult to fight unconscious bias. I know they go on courses to deal with unconscious bias, but it's incredibly difficult to do. It requires a huge amount of mental discipline, more than is probably reasonable to ask. I'm not feeling sorry for Michael Oliver in the slightest, but at the same time, maybe he does need to reflect on those stats and ask himself whether or not maybe he could take a different approach. I don't know. But he certainly, the trouble with Graham is entrenched opinions as well.
Yeah.
And the thing is that no one is willing to walk back from their view once they've said it. And I'm not saying that people would necessarily walk back about this sending off. But even if people did take a measured view after a while, calm down a bit, say, oh, actually, I can see why that was given. You're not likely to say that or add that because it's too late. It's been said. It can't be unsaid.
Well, there you go. We've been ranting on this for about 20-odd minutes now, and obviously we've come to no conclusion whatsoever, other than the fact that, yes, refereeing is hard. Refereeing is very, very hard.
And Michael Oliver hates Arsenal.
And Michael Oliver obviously hates Arsenal in a conscious way. Yeah, in a very, very conscious way. Anyway, let's move on from this, because basically Arsenal won the game. So all's well that ends well. Unfortunately, the same couldn't be said of Tottenham because Tottenham didn't win their game this weekend. And things have turned a bit ugly in Tottenham, haven't they, Terry? There was a banner, wasn't there, at the Leicester game when they were losing at home again. And the banner read, 24 years, 16 managers, 1 trophy, time for change.
Mm.
Well, you could argue that it was time for change a long time ago, but obviously they're patient folk up there in Tottenham, and now is the time for change. Stern words from the Tottenham fans there.
Yeah.
It's not a wall-to-wall banner like you see in Germany, isn't it? But it's a nicely produced one. Interestingly, the first thing I noticed when I saw that banner was that that's branded. That's using the Tottenham typography.
Is it?
Yeah, Tottenham have a very specific font. It was actually made for them by their designers. And they've used that Tottenham font. And it's well on brand.
Yeah, well, that's really good to see in a way. Although it's very English, isn't it? So we'll do it in the official font as well.
Yes.
I mean, in Germany, it's not. It's like it's semi-daubed on, isn't
yes,
it? I mean,
it is.
I'm not talking about the magnificent choreos that they do. These are the sort of like angry messages,
yes,
like, fuck you, DFB, that kind of stuff. It's sort of like daubed in black on white to
yes,
make it absolutely clear what
yes,
everyone,
yes, yes,
oftentimes in perfect sweary English as well, for the international markets, especially the Champions League ones. That is a nice touch. I do like that. I'm assuming the 24 years is probably coincident with the fact that Daniel Levy has been the chief executive of the club for that amount of time. Would that be fair? Is that what they're saying?
I'm guessing so, yes.
That's the clever subtext behind the message.
Yes, yeah. It's not saying Levy out, but it's obviously it's pointing you in that direction. It's leading you there, isn't it?
See, if this was Germany, it would be Fichtig Levy, you know. Yeah. And that would... Raus unser Verein, Levy.
No room for doubt there.
No, it's like a nice, polite sort of like message in the club's font. It's all very North London, if you ask me.
It is, yes.
I mean, the thing is, though, Graham, I mean, Daniel Levy is just doing what he's told, right?
Yeah.
A big part owner of the club is a guy called Joe Lewis, who is an incredibly wealthy man. He is the sort of silent partner in the Enit group that own Tottenham Hotspur. But I understand he is the money.
Yes.
And he doesn't really have anything to do with the running of the club. He leaves that to Daniel Levy to do.
Yeah.
And the accusation from Spurs fans is that Spurs are being run for profit. And so trophies are kind of optional. Whereas most people would consider sport to be about, well, it's about many things. It's about adventure. It's about camaraderie. It's about community. It's about health and mental health. But at the professional level, and at the very, very top of the professional level, sport is about glory and winning. It is, after all, called the glory game. And I believe that expression has some resonance with Tottenham Hotspur fans.
It certainly does, yes.
So it's poor that their club doesn't appear to be interested in the glory aspect of it, when you consider that they're one of the few clubs in the world that is capable of winning stuff.
Yes.
So I think if I was a Tottenham fan, I'd be pretty angry by this point. I was thinking, you're just here to rinse this club from as much money as you possibly can, and you genuinely don't care of whether or not. It's not, I mean, you do, you want to win, everyone wants to win trophies, but you know, it's not at the absolute centre of what you want to do, and it should be, because you're a professional sports club.
I think as well is because they are essentially one of the big six, supposedly. They've always been, in whatever number of teams you've had, they've always been included there as the big whatever, the big five, the big four, the big six. They've always been around in that group, even when they haven't been that good. And of course, there's only so much patience you've got when people refer to the fact that all the trophies being hoovered up by the big six clubs. And Tottenham just aren't getting any of them.
Brackets and Tottenham. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, even when Arsenal were at like late stage Wenger, when they weren't competing for the league at all, they were barely holding on to Champions League football. And in the end, they weren't. They were still winning FA Cups. Chelsea were ridiculously poor. They even won a European Cup when they were poor. So they've continued to win stuff. And Man United, you see the last 2 years, Eric Ten Hag brought two trophies. He brought an FA Cup and the League Cup to Old Trafford. And this is Man United, and we all know how terrible they are. You sort of think, well, how can you be such a big club and not win anything? And I know that City do hoover up a lot of the trophies, but there's still trophies there to win, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I mean, if nothing else, then there is always the EFL Cup, which I realise is not a bigger deal for the big six, with the exception of Tottenham, because, again, they've won nothing. And the FA Cup is definitely up for grabs. These competitions are unforgiving. They're easy to get knocked out of.
Mm.
One bad performance and you're out of those tournaments. But that's mitigated by the fact that you don't have to play too many games. And if you have a good draw, you play beatable opposition and you can go quite deep in these competitions. And you would really expect Tottenham to be able to compete more. Now, I can't do a forensic analysis of their record in recent competitions, but it's possible that down the years, they've made the mistake of rotating players, bringing in weaker sides in the earlier rounds that maybe has cost them the opportunity to advance in those competitions. I may have that wrong. Tottenham fans will have a better idea of what that is. But clearly, their inability to win a trophy is indicative of a sense that there is a lack of ambition at the club.
Yeah.
And that is irreconcilable. There is a scenario where club are like laser focused on winning something. They're putting all the money in. They've got guys to work very, very hard. And then they're just being unlucky. They're losing games. They're getting knocked out of tournaments. They can't win the Premier League. They're not good enough to win the Premier League. Very few clubs are, but they're just not able to. And they're just being a bit unlucky. But that doesn't seem to be the case. Like you say, Graham, Man United just seem to be this club that can just pick up trophies even when they're playing terribly. And I remember the 2016 FA Cup final, I remember how heartbroken I was and just thinking, this Man United team don't care about this trophy. This club almost doesn't care about it. The fans only want it because, you know, it just keeps the momentum going. It's like a tally. It's just like a something to add to the five goal. It means nothing to them in a way that it means to Crystal Palace fans. But that's just football and that's just the way it is. But that is not what happens with Tottenham. And I don't know what it is. And you could easily say, oh, winning mentality and stuff like that. So culture, is there a losing culture in the club, as Antonio Conte alluded to? Did he allude to it or did you just say it outright?
Yeah, probably just said it knowing him.
He was pretty frank.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing he would say, I'm sure.
Yeah. There was that rant, wasn't there? I don't remember it word for word. But to all intents and purposes, saying this club is shit. And people in here don't want to win, and that's the culture. And how do you turn that around? Yeah, you do need to change, but what are you going to do? You sell the club to who?
Yeah.
Who's going to buy it, and what are they going to change that's going to rewrite the culture of Tottenham Hotspur?
Yeah.
Tough one.
As well, they're still paying off this huge stadium as well.
Mm.
I saw a graph doing the rounds today, Swiss Ramble put it together, about how out of the Deloitte's clubs, the top 30 clubs in Europe, Tottenham are at the bottom of wages to turnover. I think 47% of their turnover is on wages.
Right.
Which I would say that's a healthy position for a football club to be in, but it's right at the bottom of that table. Now, of course, they are still paying off a huge piece of infrastructure, which is going to see them right for decades to come if they stay in the top flight. But they will stay in the top flight, don't worry about that. But I think as well at the moment, the Tottenham fans are in a position where they've still got really good players at the club. I mean, I think Kulusevski is brilliant and he can walk into any team. Son maybe is entering the latter stage of his career now. And of course, like they've had terrible problems with injuries. But over the last 10 years, perhaps ever since Gareth Bale left, that team that Gareth Bale was in, that was a team that should have won stuff. Definitely should have won stuff. And then go straight into the Kane era. And that was a team that should have won stuff. It got to the European Cup final. So that's how close it got. Yeah, you play Liverpool in the European Cup final, you're not going to win. Doesn't matter who you are. Apart from Real Madrid. Yeah, if you're Real Madrid, then you win.
an English team playing Liverpool in the European Cup, I'd certainly say he's going to find it difficult. But,
yeah.
But they did kind of implode in that game, Tottenham, didn't they? They didn't give the best version of themselves, which I think is the saddest part of that.
Yeah, yeah. Considering what they'd done to get there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can't help but imagine if you were a Tottenham fan to look at that team now and say, look, we couldn't win anything when we had these amazing teams, amazing players. Now we don't necessarily have those players anymore. And while Ange was ripping up trees in the first 3 months at the club, it's been a really difficult 12, 13 months now where they've lost over 20 games, I think, in some or something ridiculous. Those are the things that you can't escape anymore. And of course, swapping managers, I don't think is going to help now. So, yeah, something more fundamental has to happen, doesn't it?
Swapping managers at this point, it would just be a token gesture. I don't think that it would be helpful. I mean, there's part of me that thinks that perhaps Ange could be put out of his misery, but I'm sure Ange doesn't see it like that. We talked about him last week, so I don't want to tread on it too much. It's worth bearing in mind that subsequent to that game, obviously, they've lost the Leicester game, but they beat Hoffenheim in the Europa League. But my goodness, they very nearly didn't because of a late comeback from Hoffenheim. It's not a great reading for them. But there's the League Cup.
Yeah.
And they are a goal up in the League Cup. And that is a game that could be played. That's coming up relatively soon. If they were to win the EFL Cup, then it might well, you know, change the complexion somewhat. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a long way back for them, either way you look at it. I would like to think that, you know, unless they've got a very clear idea about who they're going to bring in, that they should probably stick with Ange, at least until they're out of the League Cup.
I say that nothing good will come of changing manager, but there's quite a lot of teams that haven't bothered worrying about that before, have they, really? They've just decided, well, yeah, we've got to do something. Sacking the manager is going to be the best thing. So it could easily be out of a job next week.
Yeah, it could happen this week.
Yeah.
It could have happened by now. I mean, we've not seen any notification, but it could be happening. It's one of those ones where you feel it's on the brink.
Yeah.
Let's hope it doesn't happen now, because that would be awkward for the recording and editing of this podcast.
It would be awkward, but hey, let's face it, it's not as if we haven't gone through this before.
It's true.
The problem is we've only got a week left of the transfer window. I think Levy will wait till the transfer window is shut and then sack his manager.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think that's probably fair. You know, I don't know if they've got any succession planning or anything like that going on. Who would they want to bring in? They're not going to get relegated. The best chance is just to hope that they get some of their injured players back. They move on a little bit more. Try and see if they can go deeper in the Europa League, win the AFL Cup, win the FA Cup. You know, these things are not completely out of the question for Tottenham. But certainly, you know, the AFL Cup, they're so close. The Europa League, for any English club in the Europa League, should go with some degree of expectation that that is a competition they can win.
Yeah, certainly this season, because obviously you don't get the parachuted teams from the Champions League in it this season.
Yeah, all the rubbish Champions League clubs aren't getting relegated.
Yeah.
So it's up. It's definitely up for grabs.
It is definitely up for grabs this season. And the same is true with, I think, Chelsea, a stick on for the Conference League.
Definitely. Yeah, if it, not for the fact that they've got their thirds playing, haven't they?
they seem to be doing fine with them, all right, at the moment.
I mean, they are, indeed.
Yeah. I mean, I can see the final is going to be Chelsea beating Fiorentina. Fiorentina losing the third consecutive final in the Conference League in a row.
Yeah, Fiorentina are destined. They were born to lose the Conference League final, unfortunately. Sorry, Fiorentina. They couldn't have known that when they were formed, but that is actually their destiny. That's why the competition was created.
Yes.
For Fiorentina to suffer.
Yeah.
very niche reason for creating a competition.
It really does make you think, doesn't it? Seferin would say, I need a competition where Fiorentina lose every season. Can we do that? Yeah, of course. We can't make it too obvious.
It's a great idea, Alex, but could we work a little bit more on community cohesion, do you think? Or maybe our sort of like an outreach projects? Well, yes, we could, but let's address the, you know, how do we make the Fiorentina fans miserable all the time? Yeah, it is really weird, but when you've got a club like Tottenham with the players that they have got, it is still all to play for. It could yet turn out to be a legendary season. And it would be very, very on brand if it turned out to be a massive psychodrama while at the same time being a legendary season.
Yes, it would. I think Levy knows this, and I think he's letting it play out. As you say, psychodrama. This could be the biggest fairy tale ever in football. Big Ange actually winning two trophies this season.
Big Ange winning two. Yeah, up against it. I mean, it's definitely. I mean, like, you've got to make a movie out of that. You've got to make a movie. It would be a fantastic story. I'm sure you don't, because I'm obviously are. And to a degree, as Palace, I don't either. But it would be a great story.
Yeah, it would, because it ain't going to happen. We all know that.
No, of course we know that. Yeah, he'll be out on his arse by Wednesday, I should think.
But if he is out on his arse on Wednesday, we won't know a thing about it, because Wednesday's going to be the mad Champions League night this week, isn't it?
Is that this Wednesday, is it?
Yeah.
Holy moly. The mad Champions League, right?
It's the mad Champions League where everyone kicks off at the same time, 18 games all at the same time. Mad as well the next night as well, where the Europa League does the same thing. It is going to be a crazy, crazy, crazy week. I'm just looking forward to just sitting down for 2 hours with my remote control and just flicking through all the channels, missing everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm making a date for that. No question about it. Oh, man, I didn't realise that. I thought it was next week, but oh, yes, bring it. This is the moment for the Swiss model. This is the make or break moment.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is going to fail as a piece of drama and entertainment. I don't think you get that. Yeah, your only thing that could work out is there's too much of it and you just end up missing everything, as you say. That's the only way it could fail. I'm not looking at those guys in the goals show. Right. I mean, like, they're going to be, they're going to have to double the capacity of that studio. I think you and I will end up being on there. We're available. Matt, if you're listening, we're available. We can come in on Wednesday.
We can. Don't worry about
it. Just get the limo outside my house and I'll be there, mate.
Yeah, no worries. And we'll keep all the others under control as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll look after you. We'll look after you.
And we'll behave ourselves perfectly, won't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We won't let that kind of fame go to our head. TNT fame. We're TNT famous.
Oh, but after all that, will we still be in the mood to watch football this weekend, I wonder? Well, I think we could. I think we could definitely settle down for Brentford versus Tottenham on Sunday lunchtime, shouldn't we?
Stop it. Stop it.
You'll enjoy.
I said is that I thought that it was difficult to overturn. That's all I said, Graham, and now you're triggering me.
Thanks. Yeah, well, yeah, that's on Sunday afternoon, and it will be in our box set this weekend, along with a lot of other games. So, Terry, you're going to be covering Forest-Brighton. Forest got hammered after we bigged up Bournemouth last week. Usually that means that they go really terrible. Yeah, the kiss of death. Oh, no, the kiss of life at Bournemouth. They're just going on from strength to strength. And Forest, yeah, oh, dear. 5-0, but of course that's the mighty Bournemouth, wasn't it? Against Brighton, though, Brighton, bit hit and miss at the moment, lost again at the weekend.
Yeah.
How do you think that one's going to go down then?
Opportunity for Forest to just get themselves back on the boat against Brighton, who are eminently beatable, but tough, solid mid-table Brighton. That is going to be an interesting game of football and good to see how Forest bounce back from all of that.
Yes. Yeah, and if you want to see all the games that we pick for this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe, and it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! Oh, we have some breaking news. Arsenal defender Miles Lewis-Skelly's 3-match ban imposed for a red card at Wolves on Saturday has been overturned. Shows you what those two Muppets know.